Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and we continue our look at what's happening with the death of Freddie Gray, the protest taking place in Baltimore, what it means for the city, where we might be going. We have a lot of people on the air today with us in different parts during the course of this hour. We're going to talk first with some of the community activists that have been in the streets there every day. The Reverend Heber Brown's in the studio. He's been there every day as well. And we are joined by Tawanda Jones on the phone, of course, the sister of Tyrone West, who's been organizing these West Wednesday protests for the last 2 years and been leading the struggle here in Baltimore, really, to demand accountability. Tawanda, I'm glad you could join us for a minute by phone. I appreciate it. Megan Sherman joins us. She's producer at Real News Network, who's been covering this with some intensity. And Megan, good to have you with us as well.
Thanks for having me.
Tim Wilson is here, co-director of On Our Shoulders, and joining us here in the studio is Ray Cook, who is the founder and co-director of On Our Shoulders. Good to see him back in the studio once again, and Tim here as well. And James MacArthur is here, who's a blogger for the Baltimore Spectator, who spent months in jail in 2013 following a standoff for the police and has been covering, doing his street reporting like no other. He stands, gets in the street and tells his stories on the spot at the moment from where he's sitting. So good to have you all here in the studio.
Thank you, Mark.
Thanks, Mark.
So you all were there last night, and I think I asked you, James, just a moment ago, I said, who was arrested? And you were saying last night, what happened last night?
I arrived there moments after the arrest. If I were there early, I probably would have been snatched up, too, because, you know, what I do is a very deeply immersive version of reporting, and everyone else is standing in the crowd taking pictures. Well, I want to rise above it, literally, just for a better photography. It's for nothing else. And, you know, the police don't have the right to tell me what kind of story I can tell. I mean, there was no compelling law enforcement reason to arrest me. And from what I understand, it was another incident of a quote-unquote barricade breach. But again, I know Payam was standing next to me with our backs facing the police with cameras in our hands. So we're not threatening them. B, we're not doing anything nefarious. It's obvious what we're doing. And what occurred when we were snatched up, I can tell you, is no different than what we did Saturday with no problems from the police. It's all of a sudden, they are escalating it. They are ramping up tensions by not knowing what to do. It almost seems like the pressure is squeezing them, so now they're bursting.
Tawanda, I know you have a short time with us because you've got to go back to your classroom and teach, but I want you to talk to me, talk to us here and our listeners about the continuity for you between where you started because of your brother's murder, Tyrone West, and where we are today. And you're continuing struggling how you got in the midst of this.
Yes, and thanks for having me this morning.
Always a pleasure.
And good morning to everyone in the studio and on the phone. But nevertheless, we've been in the struggle since July the 18th, 2013, when my brother was brutally murdered. And before my brother was brutally murdered, we've been in this struggle for decades, right here in Baltimore City, you know, and when Anthony Anderson was brutally murdered by the same unit that brutally murdered my brother, you know, it just disgusts me. And I told them that we're in a state of emergency. They didn't believe me when we were at that town hall meeting for when the DOJ was here. And I let them know, you're coming here with a Band-Aid, and we have life-threatening wounds right now. Like, it just disgusts me that I feel like if they would have done something in Anthony Anderson's case by holding these officers, his case was ruled a homicide.
Right.
You know, and if they would have stepped up, the mayor and all of them, and they would have got charges put on these officers, then, you know, the accountability level would be there, and whereas though they would think before they go and brutalize us. And I feel like the work that we literally been doing is like almost in vain. We're there peacefully week after week and town meeting after town meeting there advocating for all the victims of police brutality. And then poor Freddie Gray, now you can't even walk down the street and make eye contact. And he was brutally murdered, and they still haven't given a reason why they pulled this guy and we stopped him. You know, it's ridiculous.
And Megan, you've been covering this intensely and been involved in these things yourself as an activist. So talk about what you've been seeing and your perspective on the demonstrations of the last several days.
Okay. Hi, Mark, by the way.
Oh, good to have you here, always.
So basically what I've seen is just it's really similar to Ferguson in some ways. Like, basically community members are really
that's right. You covered Ferguson as well, right?
Yes.
Yeah, sir. Right.
Really similar to what I saw when I was in Ferguson. Folks are really tired of the treatment that they've been getting from law enforcement, especially, like, folks don't know that the Gilmore Homes area is, like, one of the most heavily policed neighborhoods in Baltimore. And so, I mean, the Western District is literally 3 or 4 blocks away from the housing project. And so, I mean, pretty much everybody who was out there, has had some type of experience with the police, a negative experience from elderly women to young men to, you know, sometimes in a lot of cases, young children as well. And so basically what I've seen is just that people are like voicing their frustration with a system that they don't feel like is really protecting them and that they don't really feel like has their best interest in mind. And so you see that frustration coming out with people coming out into the streets, but also like with some of the things that people are saying to police officers while, you know, during the protest. So.
You know, I want to get your perspective on something that at least I feel I'm seeing when I was on the East Side and what I feel I'm seeing in these demonstrations, and you can tell me if I'm wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But it feels to me and it looks to me as if the folks in the streets are not just activists, your everyday activists who come out for demonstrations.
That's very, very true.
We're seeing community people out there. I mean, I've seen signs in my drive past Gilmore Homes the other day when I just stopped by to see somebody, and there are signs in the windows of regular people's homes saying, "Is your water cut off?"
Mm-hmm.
Black Lives
mm-hmm.
Matter. I mean, there's something mm-hmm. bubbling up that's like mm-hmm. making a political fervor from the bottom up that has nothing to do with the activists coming in. It has to do with the people knowing what's going on and wanting to push out.
Yeah, I mean, I think like I said, like the situation in Ferguson and across the country, really in California and New York, I think that people are seeing that they have a power, and I really will tip my hat off to the folks in Ferguson for kind of sparking that that off and like giving people that sense of like ownership over their communities, and especially because that movement was led by young people, and so you know, it's really great to see a lot of young black men, young black women. Out in the streets who have no real experience necessarily in organizing, but they're just really passionate about the issue. And, you know, I think that they feel like if folks in other places can take to the streets and they can have their voices heard to a certain extent, then they can do the same exact thing. And so I think that level of empowerment is super important when it comes to movement building, because a lot of times you don't really see movements. Like we like to talk a lot about grassroots, but you don't really see everyday people coming out in the streets and really talking about the things that they want to see happen in their community. What I'm hoping is just that at some point, you know, that people can kind of channel that energy into something. Same thing with Ferguson. That was my argument, is that we can channel that energy into something that is a lot more concrete so that people can change the conditions that they're living in on an everyday basis. Like, you know, police brutality is one thing, and that's super important, and it's definitely a part of, you know, living in a racist white supremacist system, but it's definitely important that people change the circumstances of the poverty that they're living in, and, you know, to help one another gain more opportunity and stuff. So I'm hoping to see that, you know, kind of spiral out of this.
Tawanda, also, I mean, because you've kept up these demonstrations because of your brother and others, but what's taking off now, I think, partially because of your continued consistent stand up and protest, is this broadening of things. You've been out there most every day, haven't you?
Yes, every day. Yes. Yep.
So I'm curious what you think, how this has changed, how it's changed what you've seen from your family and your supporters and the block standing up every week, but this has gotten so much broader and larger. What are your thoughts about where it might be going?
My thoughts are, I'm just praying that everything like works out, because what I'm seeing is everybody is disappointed. Like, everybody's disappointed. I see a lot, like, we all are hurt when any type of tragedy happens and things like that. But right now, I'm seeing so many hurt people. Like, you can feel the anger. Like, it's almost, I'm not even going to lie, like, I'm almost kind of, like, scared to literally go out there, you know, because it's just so hostile. And it's just like, and then with people being peaceful, and you're going to barricade people from, you know, public property, that's just like really, you know. And it's like, you already know people are upset, angry, instead of them like saying positive things to keep things down, nobody's saying nothing, you know. And it's disgusting, and I feel like everybody's tension is up like sky high, like, cause everybody is tired of, like, even though like our city now is in the spotlight, but our emotions and tensions been here since we heard about Trayvon Martin. You know, people felt some kind of way. Because my brother Tyrone West was one of the people that felt some type of way. He was telling me there's a Zimmerman on every corner. We had discussion the day he was brutally murdered here. So it's like, we are tired. Enough, enough. We need real change now. And we're not asking for nothing but something that's due to us. And that's justice. How can you not give us justice?
So I, you know, I, I'm curious everybody's kind of thoughts on what the mayor. I'm going to ask all of our panelists the response of the city government so far, and what you've seen the response of the city government. I mean, there was a huge article in the Sun this morning about the mayor and others who were part of the National Conference of Mayors and how they started talking about how to respond to this after what happened in Ferguson and what they would do. And there's been I've seen mixed feelings with people saying the mayor has at least stood up and stated she wants to do something, have the everything done by a week from Friday and give people answers. Others saying this is not enough and this is not getting into the heart of the problem. So what are your thoughts about how the city government has responded to this? Tim, we haven't heard from you. You want to start?
Well, I think, Mark, that personally myself, I think that, you know, most of these politicians in the city government want to do something about it, but they don't know what to do. It's like everybody's running around confused and scared. So, I mean, it's up to us as community leaders to jump up and get to the community ourselves and do what the politicians and, you know, the mayor and, like, the police department is not doing. Like, I see, like, we have police brutality because the police are scared, and then we have people that's fighting the police because they're scared. You understand what I'm saying? So when it comes down to somebody running, you know, for justice and stuff like that, it need to be us as people in the community, and we need peace. We need for it to be a ceasefire. You understand what I'm saying? Like, we can't go against the police department and fight for our justice and rights if we still doing dumb stuff. So that's why I'm taking upon myself as being 25 years old to step up and be the face for our black men. I'm not afraid anymore. I'm willing to stand up.
One of the things that you have to realize is that this has been going on for years and years, and what you see, people are fed up now, and people feel like they don't have nothing to lose now. And we've been on this front line seeing kids and young people dying for many a years. And now to have this young man killed in the manner that he was, and for you to say that you don't know what happened to this young man and we haven't come up with a concrete answer on why he died. This young man didn't jump in the back of that wagon and kill himself, okay, somewhere. And for you to have cameras on every corner of those projects and only one of them picked up something on there, something is wrong. And you just approved the $2 million budget to keep the cameras going. And that could have been money put in that community to help that community. And what people don't realize is that these people are living this thing day in, day out, you know. And our kids and our young people are dying in the streets in a manner like they're animals now. And that's not the way it's supposed to be. We have a right to live and live a decent life. And right now our children are running scared, like Timothy said. The city is running off of fear right now. And when you have a fearful city, anything can happen.
Mm-hmm. Before we go to break here, and these are very powerful words from Ray Cook, and I'm glad Ray's joined us once again. He's been absent from the show for too long. It's good to have him back in the studio. But let me ask Tawanda and Megan, before you guys run and before we take a break here and bring in Heber and Kimberly and others into the program, just kind of your thoughts on where you think where we might go from here. I mean, it seems to me that something concrete has to begin to happen to change the nature of policing, but our communities in general. And, you know, it's not – I think we have to get beyond – we'll explore this in the rest of the hour. We have to get beyond this notion of the rotten apple in the barrel. And because the barrel itself is decaying and all the apples are affected. And so I'm curious your thoughts about where you think where this has to end. What are the concrete things the city and others have to answer? Start with Tawanda and we'll end up with Megan. Tawanda Jones.
Okay, and I just feel like right now, because all the bills got killed in Annapolis, I feel like now they need to, you know, revisit those bills and like have something in play for us and legislation that helps us, that works for us. you know. And I think if they do a lot of policy changes and a lot of community things with building back the trust and things like that, and we all working together, because we do need police officers and everybody need to be safe. So with that being said, they need to do a quick reform, and more so, and that's by holding these officers accountable. If everybody's held accountable and there's transparency there, then we can get our communities back.
Megan Sherman?
So, yeah, I think that there's, like, one of two ways that this could go. I definitely think there needs to be political action, of course, kind of like what Tawanda was saying. There needs to be people supporting legislation that change some of the laws and some of the policies around policing. But I definitely think that it starts mainly with organizing the frustration and the anger that most people in the streets are feeling right now. Like, I'm really afraid that, you know, people, like, because there is sort of a lack of organization, at least from the outside looking in, I could be wrong, but it seems like people are just coming out in hordes just because they support it, but there isn't necessarily a strategy or a tactic for how to protest, what the plan is, or when people show up. And so I think that translates also into the organizing aspect as far as, like, getting people the resources that they need to be able to sustain that type of action. Because people can be in the streets, but that's very difficult to maintain. Even when you see in Ferguson and in other places, people really organize so that folks from out of town could come in and be a part of those movements. So I think there needs to be more structure to the on-the-ground grassroots movement stuff so that people can have a space and a forum to plan for the future and figure out what communities need and figure out how to move the protests and, you know, social action.
Megan, I know you got to run because you got a lot of editing to do for Real News, but just before we go to break, expand a little bit on what you just said about more structure in the grassroots movement. What does that mean to you?
So it's kind of a twofold thing. So on the one hand, it's like, well, just from what I've seen during the protest, right? Like, so yesterday, folks came out, met at Presbyterian Mount Street. That was the main protest. And there were maybe about 50 people there, marched to Western PD. And when we were in front of the police department, there was a sect of people that kind of broke off from the protest and marched around the neighborhood and then kind of came back later on in the day. And there were other folks who stayed at the police department and, you know, continued to engage with police and, you know, had a number of different discussions, I guess, among the group. But, like, to me, that feels like a fractured movement. Like, if somebody's going to be leading it and it's going to be organized, and I think personally I feel like it should be organized by the people who are from Gilmore Homes, then there needs to be some type of, like, just in my experience as an activist, those types of movements and protests work better because people come there. The energy doesn't fizzle out. Like, people are chanting consistently. There's a plan for how the action is going to end. And then after the action is over with, you don't lose as many people, so then people can stick around. And there could be a conversation about what needs to happen later on in the week. And, you know, and as people continue to do that type of, protesting every day, you get used to seeing the same faces.
Right.
And so therefore you build that sense of community over time. And so once people harness that power and that energy of the folks who are really dedicated to coming out every day, then there can be more done to, organize the folks in Gilmore Homes to do more constructive things. Like, protesting is great, and I think people should do that. But I also, like I said before, think that there should be other things done to address the needs of the people in the community. Because you can only sustain protesting for so much time. So.
No, I'm glad that's why I asked you to kind of stretch out what you were saying. We have to take a break here, but I appreciate those words. I think that may be a conversation we have to have on this program, and I think the community has to have in the coming weeks and months is organizing. Because, I mean, there's someone who's a little longer in the tooth now, but who has been both a protester and an organizer over the years. It's harder to organize, but more fundamental to organize, to change the system, to build a movement that actually changes things, and that's on-the-ground hard work. And I think you've made it. Well, we'll come back. I'm going to get you back on the air here in the next week or so that we can really push that conversation. Megan Sherman, thanks for all the work you do with the Real News Network and all your work before that. Continue working as an activist. Always good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
And Tawanda Jones, I want to thank you for standing up and being the strength you are for your family and for this community in the memory of your brother Tyrone West, and continue your day job of taking care of our children. Tawanda, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Tawanda Jones and Megan Sherman will be back with the rest of our guests. Heber Brown and Kimberly Moffitt joining us as well as we continue this conversation. And as we go to break, we are hearing Spirit in the Sky by Norman Greenbaum, which hit gold on this day in 1970. We'll be right back. Dum, 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 dee-doo-ah. Ooh, yeah. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and we are here with the Reverend Dr. Heber Brown, community activist, pastor of Pleasant Hope Baptist Church, executive director of Orisa's Cross Freedom School, Dr. Kimberly Moffitt, associate professor of American Studies at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, and co-editor of Blackberry and Redbones, Critical Articulations of Black Hair, Body Politics in Africana Communities. Tim Wilson's remaining with us, co-director of On Our Shoulders. Ray Cook is in the studio, who is co-director and founder of On Our Shoulders. And James MacArthur, who puts out the Baltimore Spectator, who was arrested many months back for his activism and put in jail for a while, is out and still back on the street writing his stuff. You are with us at 410-319-8888. When it comes to your calls, write to us here at talk@steinershow.org. So, Heber, let me let you jump in. I'm glad you're in the studio and start off and get your kind of analysis of this. And I know we talked about where this is going, I thought that Megan's comments were really very important and profound about the steps to organizing a community to kind of seize the kind of power that has to be seized when any change is going to happen.
Yeah, I certainly agree, and that we need to respect those who provide leadership in the Gilmore Homes and have been, you know, for a very long time. And I think I had a professor one time talk about how, you know, leader is less of a title and more of a role you play. It's a way that you serve. And so I say those who provide leadership as opposed to, you know, the leaders, which sometimes can be a fixed identity. Everybody provides leadership in one way, shape, or form. And so in Gilmore Homes, there's leadership already there. Even if you can't recognize that leadership, those grandmothers who sit on those stoops, they're providing leadership. The 12 o'clock boys and the boys on the dirt bikes, they provide leadership. It takes time to establish relationships with those who are already providing leadership. And at this particular moment, we have an opportunity as people are fixated and focused, necessarily so, on this issue. There's a sensitivity and an openness to say, okay, well, let's look at this in a broader form, or a bigger picture, an analysis. Let's analyze this and then let's think through some of the strategy around not just the demonstrations, but the strategy around the continued peace. And so on that front, you know, in terms of personally the ways I'm looking at leadership is, you know, I did an assessment of the churches in that area and called the pastors who were there and said, listen, mm-hmm. I need y'all to open your churches up for meeting spaces, for ongoing organizing training and meeting space for these folks to come in. So this, once the cameras are gone, this can be a place, a safe harbor, where continued organizing, training, and information can happen.
Has the response been from the churches? Because people often complain the churches don't get involved enough.
The churches are absolutely there. And I'm so Pastor Michael Parker, Pastor Rodney Hudson, Dr. Alfreda Wiggins, and so many others had a prayer vigil last night. Mm-hmm. And I was thankful to, you know, for the opportunity to help organize that and, you know, provide some logistical support to that. Tonight, Sharon Baptist Church is having a prayer vigil. So the churches are starting where they're comfortable and where they're familiar mm-hmm. in terms of prayer vigils and prayer walks. But the opportunities are there to go beyond the prayer vigils and prayer walks. And so that's where the next step would be, opening up, continuing to keep the churches open for meeting space, provide resources, as the church has always been. Church has always been in spiritual centers. My dear friend and brother, Minister Carlos Muhammad, was there last night with our brothers and sisters from Muhammad Mosque. Number five, six. I'm sorry.
Forest Park
number
Avenue. Six.
They were down there last night as well, and so I'm thankful for them. And so in terms of that spiritual aspect, that's all down there. Can I say just a quick piece, too, because Megan pulled out something that I frankly agree with, and we were talking about last night, in terms of the splintering of different groups and things going in different directions. There's a lot going on. And if you ask me right now, Mark, you know, what are the rallies that are going on today and what time do they start and where they're going to end? Man, I don't know. Listen, I'm trying to tell you there are some organizations who are planning, you know, these marches, and I have some information. And as I think y'all alluded to, there's other marches and rallies that's going on. It's bubbling up from the people who live there. And so, mm-hmm. like yesterday, when I went over to the community, my plan was to go to Western District. As I'm driving, I see a group of people marching down Pennsylvania. So I jump out the car with my boys, and we start following those folks. I thought they was from, you know, they were coming from Western District, and they weren't. But I just kept on going with them. We ended up shutting down MLK and Pennsylvania Avenue and having a circle there. And the speakers there, I didn't know and recognize. But again, I'm respecting local leadership. I think there's a certain way you come alongside with integrity as an organizer. And so I know how to play the role of the lead and spokesperson and know how to back up and support those who are already there. And so the speakers are doing great. And then from there, the group, as we shut that down, the group was marching toward, somebody said, let's go shut down 95 South.
No.
I was like, I'm going to go the other way. And, but I marched for a little bit. I let them keep on going. They didn't get naked to 95. They ended up trying to take, I-83. Bless their hearts. But, you know, but you know what? I was glad I was there, because if you're not willing to be there, if you're not willing to be shoulder to shoulder with folk, and at least they'd be able to say, well, Heba was there. Heba ain't go down 95 with us. Listen, I'm going down 95 without planning to be. It's just like getting arrested. You get arrested when you plan to be arrested. Please understand, when you see the clips and the videos from Dr. King and others, please understand they weren't getting arrested when they didn't want to get arrested. They got arrested strategically when they wanted to get arrested. And so all of this is strategy, and people underestimate the discipline that goes with being an organizer.
Absolutely.
Which is why I feel like it's a great opportunity. I have to be there on the ground, connected with my brothers and with my sisters, because yes, it pains me. I'm a father, two sons. I'm a parent. I'm a citizen. I'm human. It pains me. But if you're not there on the ground, shoulder to shoulder, if you're just, you know, throwing critical remarks over social networking sites, and you're not pressing the flesh with folk, and they see you showing up, then you don't have no credibility to show up and tell nobody what to do.
That's very important. Yeah. Really important.
Sorry, Mark.
No. You have to be sorry. Why are you sorry, man? No, this is good.
I think what you said, all the things you said, are very critical to be understood. Yeah. Kimberly.
I so appreciate, I think what I have noted, because I've been out of town and now coming in the midst of what's happening, and what I appreciate is seeing the diversity of perspectives that are coming out of our community. Even when we saw what was happening in the civil rights movement, because of how singular focused media was, there was a tendency to only show this unified, or what appeared to be a unified or monolithic voice. And I think because of social media now, we are having the opportunity to hear that Black folks are not monolithic, and that we do have different perspectives of how we do this. I agree both with Megan and Reverend Brown that we definitely need to still be organized in a fashion that we can move this movement forward and not be constrained by just our uncontrollable emotion related to this, because that doesn't get us anywhere. It gets people mad, it gets people thrown in jail, but it doesn't advance the movement, and that's where we need to be very strategic about. I also want to say that I think it's very interesting, certainly from this academic world that I'm operating, that this really feels to me like Baltimore's 15 minutes of fame.
Yes.
For us to peel back what really has been happening in this urban center.
That's right.
And I don't mean what David Simon did in The Wire for five seasons.
Right.
I'm talking about the narrative of what people are dealing with on a day-to-day basis, and the police state that it feels like Gilmore Homes is, that allows us to see that this is real, that this is not for folks to kind of gaze upon and say how interesting Baltimore is, but for us to start dealing with the social justice issues that are important to Black people and to those of us that are trying to raise sons in this city, and making sure that they are safe and have viable lives.
Can I say something real quick?
Okay, then we're going to open the phones and get back to Tim and the other side of the room.
You talk about the police state, and one of the things I was trying to get from the officers, when they put up the new barricades, which I heard today are pushed back even further, I said, so tell me, the people who live on that block, how do they get in there? Well, they have to tell us. Wait a minute, you're the police, and they have to tell you they live there so you can let them through this barricade? And how much more do you want to make a community feel under siege than doing that? Where now, just to go home, what if my girlfriend lived there? I have to explain, well, you don't have ID that shows you. Well, we shouldn't have to do that in America.
Why
is it okay in Black communities? This happens nowhere else. There's been civil unrest in white communities in this country. Maybe the media doesn't cover it the same way. But whenever it happens, especially in Baltimore, we allow the police this free reign. And they talk about this law enforcement officer's Bill of Rights. We have to mention that, right? Why is that so important to a department that routinely violates the Bill of Rights for everyone else that they're policing? Why aren't the leadership here stressing on that? That, you know what, we've been wrong. We've made a lot of mistakes in this department. You have not heard that from any political leadership here. Just a simple admission to the community. We've been wrong. We've made a lot of mistakes, but we want to fix it now. No, we're seeing this defensive posture, and that's only escalating things because people on the streets know better. They know, hey, that's not how it's going down.
No, and we also got to see that some of this has to do with, as we talked about the program earlier in the week, the drug war in this country and in America and at Gilmore Holmes that Freddie Gray would never have been stopped had it not been for that drug war.
Yeah.
That would never have, that wouldn't have happened. That's why, and this young man who, as I said, as one of the people who knew him said to me, he'd been arrested already a few times for mostly really stupid little charges. They weren't really serious charges. He was awaiting trial. And, of course, when he saw the police, he went the other way because he didn't want to go back to jail for nothing. He just wanted to be about his business. And that's very real. When you say he was carrying a switchblade, again, I'll say it. Look, anybody who grew up in a neighborhood that is a hard neighborhood, most people carry something with them because they want to make sure if someone goes down, they can protect themselves. That's life.
But when was carrying a switchblade considered illegal?
It is illegal in Baltimore.
I thought it had to be a certain length.
He wasn't brandishing it. He wasn't waiting.
It was in his pocket.
It was in his pocket. The key to it was in his pocket. He never pulled it out. He never flashed it at the police. It was in his pocket.
His hands were up.
And that was in the police report itself, if y'all seen it, you know, on the news that they posted. We recovered a knife from his pocket.
Right.
Not from his hand. Not from, you know, him charging after me.
Not from the complainant saying he threatened me with it earlier.
Right.
So let me go to the phones here and then come right and let our listeners have a bit of a say here. 410-319-8888 is number here. Sal in Fells Point, you've been holding on for a while. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, Mark. I really appreciate the time. I love your show. And I think that we are living in an extremely exciting yet terrifying time. And that this energy that we have needs to be harnessed and focused in the right way. I totally agree with your panel. I believe that we need to organize and create our own civil review board and actually go into these town hall meetings and these city councilman meetings and take out people that we can go and say, hey, you've been here for 20-odd years. You've done nothing for us. Thank you. Have a nice day. And then combat the issues that are real. If you have the most prominent police department in America going to get trained by the IDF, the Israeli occupation forces, who are an apartheid state, an illegal state, and they're using tactics that you're getting trained by these people, what type of, what kind of relationship are they going to have with the people? They're going to look at them as enemy combatants. This isn't protecting and serving. This is corralling and keeping segregated. And we have a mayor that is so incompetent that only caters to Canton, Fells Point, and Charles Village. And that's why we need to start with getting her out and getting that retarded-looking police commissioner. They're both on Kotam.
Let me stop for a moment, and I appreciate the call, Sal. Let me, and before we go back to Barbara and Leatrice, when we get their calls right away here, I want to rest with this for a minute for a couple reasons. Well, I mean, the political reality of what the mayor is doing or not doing, and our thoughts about that. I mean, because that, and she's coming on the show next Tuesday.
She's on air right now, by the way.
She's coming here next Tuesday when we're going to ask her very serious questions about this case and more. I'd like to hear your real thoughts about what she's done and what the official response has been and what you prefer to have heard, if what you heard is what you think we should hear. Heber, you look like you're ready to get into the mic. Go ahead.
I was trying to beat him, but he is.
Go ahead.
No, please. I need to breathe anyway. You go first.
Go ahead, Kimberly. And Tim wants to talk too. So that's what you're right.
The mayor is doing what she is supposed to do as a politician. Hmm. So, unfortunately, I don't have much in terms of expectation of what she has said thus far, except the party line of standing up for her city and the police department. My concern with that is the comments that I have heard her make or her remarks have not expressed any sense of compassion mm-hmm. towards the loss of life in a very extreme way. For someone's spine to be severed 80%, that's extreme. And for me, I needed to feel as a mother to mother, as a black woman to black woman, I needed to feel or sense some compassion coming from her, and I haven't heard that yet. That's not to say that it hasn't been done, but I have not heard that yet. And I want to say, so I hear that perspective, but then I also know just a month or two ago, she was very public about chastising black men for not being in their communities and taking care of them. And so that concerns me that she has that particular space in which to criticize or raise comments about what black men are not doing in our communities. But then when we have an opportunity to have such a conversation about a young black man who has lost his life, I'm not feeling her own compassion to add to the conversation. Instead, it's business as usual.
Well,
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Sam. Go ahead.
Well, to me, it just seemed like, you know, she's the face of our city right now. And you on worldwide news, you know, and you go on these cameras and you out of fear just saying anything out of your mouth is wrong. When you say it's not a race issue, it's because of people having baby out of wedlock. Like, why are you going to chill on the ignorance? Don't do it. Because the media is blowing things out of proportion. That is what they're there for, to blow everything out of proportion. So with you being the face of our communities and the face of our city and you blowing things out of proportion as well and downgrading our people, it doesn't make sense. So when she come on to this show, I will be calling in to ask her a few questions myself.
You're more than welcome to do that.
Because I want her to clear up that statement that she said. And I'm pretty sure everybody else wants to know, what does you mean that it's not a race issue? Is because of people having babies out of wedlock. What did that have to do with anything as far as this police brutality?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would think that, you know, I think both of those are great considerations, questions, and concerns about what the mayor is saying and the sense of empathy and compassion she's sharing and stating.
Or not.
I'm sorry. But not part of that. Yes. But what I'd also say, and I think Sister Tawanda briefly touched on it, was that, you know, more than public sound bites and more than, you know, empathy, they had opportunity as lawmakers to do something substantive from January to April of this year. As we were down there, I mean, really, like I never had before, helping to organize people to get down to Annapolis. We had 17 pieces of legislation, and the majority of which did not pass. The overwhelming majority of those 17 bills that would have strengthened police accountability and transparency did not pass. Matter of fact, didn't even make it out of committee.
Right.
Committee chairman, let's go ahead and call the names. Senator Bobby Zirkin, Delegate Joseph Valerio, they did not let the bills out of their committees. And so when I see people, and this is a Democratic-led legislature, when I see them on national news all of a sudden now expressing concern and now they're wondering what's wrong and how we can make things better, you had a chance to do it from January to April. And people were taking their time. You know, Mark, better than most, they don't make it easy for everyday citizens to come down and be a part of the political process and help change, legislate. They make it difficult.
Right.
From 9 a.m. to 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock at night, people were down there. I'm talking about everyday folk were down there waiting to testify. People with children, people with spouses and partners and loved ones, responsibilities and work. We sacrificed for 90 days to be there, and they did not pass a single piece of significant legislation to help signal that a change of culture was coming. And so don't come to me now. Don't go on national TV now acting like you're some champion to help, you know, address these issues. You had your opportunity. Forget the sound bites. Pass legislation. That's what politicians are supposed to do.
So let me just say this. I want to play a quick clip here. And it was in the Some Papers, on the Some Papers site that were taking off. But I think it's important to hear this. This is the young man, Kevin Moore, who shot the video at Gilmore Homes when Freddie Gray was being arrested. And just to hear his words about why he did it, what he saw, I want you all to get this. And we're going to go to the phones, and Barbara and Leah Trace, we're going to get your calls here in just a minute. But it only takes 2 minutes. I want you to hear Kevin Moore's voice about why he shot it, why he gave the video up, and what he saw and what he thinks.
Before I hit the corner, I heard the taser, but I couldn't record it because I was still in the backside. But once I got around to see where Freddie was, I instantly started recording, and I pulled my camera out. I couldn't get a good view from the back, so I went around the van to try to get a better angle. I just saw the way they had him folded up. They had him folded up like he was a crab or like a piece of origami, you know what I mean? Like, he was all bent up, and they had his knee, the officer had their knee and his neck, and he was just screaming. He was, I mean, like, screaming for life, you know what I mean? He couldn't breathe. He needed an asthma pump, which he let them know. I couldn't breathe. I need an asthma pump. They ignored it. You know what I mean? When they went to pick him up off the ground, his legs were limp.
Man, I've been recording this shit.
It's just, they really did a number on him. And then on top of all of it, they're denying it. They're denying the fact that Freddie was okay before the police got to him. You know what I mean?
After they tase Joe like that, you wonder why he can't use his legs.
The heels of his feet were in his back. And I mean, like, he couldn't move. And then they yelled, stop resisting, stop resisting. But there's no resistance. There's no resistance. He couldn't move. I just, you know what I did, man? Channel 13, Channel 2, New York Times, CNN, everyone. I gave it to everybody I could. Fox 45, even Sports Station I was trying to give it to. You know, I'm tired of the police killing us and getting away with it because Black Lives Matter. I just don't see how they could say, oh, we didn't do this or we didn't do that, and Freddie's gone now. Enough is enough. You wonder why we dislike the police or why we're so aggressive toward the police. This is why.
So that was the voice of Kevin Moore, who lives at Gilmore Homes and who shot the video. And my wife sent that to me this morning. Valerie sent it to me this morning and said, have you seen this? I had not seen it nor heard it. I wanted to make sure all of you saw it because not everybody looks at the Sun Papers website. And I want you to hear this on our program. And just to me, hearing that, it's hard to hear that young boy, young man. Well, everybody's young to me because I'm old and he could be my grandson.
Those were his last words.
And he was screaming in pain and you could hear that. And, you know, it's hard. I mean, and when you drive through Gilmore Homes, you walk through Gilmore Homes, you talk to people in Gilmore Homes, it is an occupied territory. People feel that. They want to be safe on the streets from the thugs in the corner. Of course they do. But they don't want to be safe on the street from the thugs this way. And there's another way to do it. And I just had to say that. But Ray, you were going to say what, and then we'll open the phones.
You know, until society and everybody truly hear the cries of our young people out in the street, our young people have been crying out like this for years, and no one has listened. No one has, and the government has listened. Just like they do racial profiling against blacks, our kids in the hood are racial profiling police because you don't know which one of them is going to give you justice or beat the hell out of you. And it's the same thing. And we have got this right now, regardless of what's going on now, we still got to get some healing in our community right now. And we need to create some things that healing will start. And until people start listening, truly hearing the young brother standing on that corner, the young sister standing on that corner, crying out to see for a way to get out of that hood, to have a decent way of life, we're going to continue to have this. And Gilmore is just a potential for many a neighborhood in this city. Poplar Grove Street, North Longwood, East Baltimore, it's happening.
That's right.
Our kids have been being beat the hell out of for years. This is nothing new.
And it's nothing new. And go ahead, Jorgen. Did you want to jump
in?
Yeah,
well, how ironic is it that the recurring theme, Eric Garner, I can't breathe.
Come
this
on,
guy in Tulsa, although the media has wiped it out, he said, I couldn't breathe. And they say, F your breath. Nobody's mentioning that. They're just saying he was shot with a gun instead of a taser. And this guy. And it's a symbolism, too. We literally can't breathe in these communities. They can't physically breathe.
They can't
There's so much pressure.
Thank you.
These impoverished black communities, which is where this is happening. They can't breathe. And everybody's ignored it. This one wanted an asthma pump. They ignored that. You know.
You hear this cry, man. That, to me, if that doesn't touch, I mean, if that just doesn't fill you with anger, to hear that brother crying out like that, that could be anybody's brother, son,
grandson,
uncle. It could even be a young sister out there doing it because they're also putting their needs in sisters out there.
Yes.
So don't get it twisted. They talking about they got to call a female officer on scene. The men put their hands on females and get away with it.
My biggest concern is, in terms of the media's narrative, is that we continue to see the same story being told, because we can disclaim so much about the experiences of the young black men who are being assaulted and killed, in terms of whether they're running because of child support warrants or because they've been arrested previously. It helps to explain away how these bodies are being treated, and we disregard them as though they don't matter because they're not perfect victims, but perfect victims don't exist. And so then in terms of being able to hear the voice of the people who are being victimized, even though they are not perfect, is being lost, and that needs to be heard.
Let me open the phones again. Do you want to say anything, Jordan? Okay. I think it's hard for all of us, because when you hear that cry, and when you hear, because as my dear friend Ray Cook was saying, that cry has been going on forever. Mm-hmm. And you hear that all, if you're old as we are, and you've come up in the communities that we've come up in, and you've seen that over and over again for 50 years. It happens over and over again. The only reason it's out there now is because of this technology that people hold, take these pictures, and now the world sees it. And as the world sees it, it's harder to say it doesn't happen.
But it's not new.
It's like in the Civil Rights Movement. When the Civil Rights Movement really came to the attention of the public, it was not because a lot of us were going to jail and getting beaten up. It was because somebody took a picture, started taking movies of what happened to people, and people saw it in their living rooms and went, "That's going on?" Well, that's what's happening now, I think, with the police interaction in poor black communities and black communities in general.
That we go all the way back to the day the Marvin came, and we're still talking
about this.
This.
So.
Well, but even more important is the psychological damage that it does to our communities. Mm-hmm. Because we experience it and see it over and over again, what does it do to the rest of the community and what they are living with?
Come on.
Let me get one call here before we have to take a quick break and come back to our guest. We're going to go to line four. Is it Leah Trace? You're on the air. Welcome. Hello?
Hello?
Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, my name is Latrice.
I'm sorry, Latrice. I'm sorry.
I just have two comments. One is, if Freddie got arrested for having a knife on him.
Oh, please. Sorry, I'm sorry.
At the store. You can buy a knife at a store.
Right.
It frightens me because I have two boys that I drive around with every day. And in my car, I have a mace on my keychain, and I also have a knife. So you mean to tell me if I get pulled over for something as dumb as a brake light, I'm looking for your eyes, you're going to pull me over, and you see the stuff in my car, my life could be lost?
Yes.
Yeah, that's what they're saying.
You will go to jail.
You know, so that's crazy. My second comment is, in reference to the officials, mayor, the governor, where are you guys? I understand your hands are tied, but come out here and give some hugs to your community. The same people who put you in your positions, come out here and show them that, listen, I'm here for a reason. It might not look like it, but I'm with you guys. Come out here and hug these people that's out here at these protests. Walk with them to let them know that I care about my city. This is your city. Show them that you care. Don't be on TV not saying something or saying something that's not, you know, come out here with us. That's how you make a stand. That's how you help change when you have people in higher positions that show that they're with their people.
They're not.
Latrice, I appreciate the call and the passion and the substance of what you were just saying. We're going to take a very brief break and come back. And Barbara, Ray, Leo, the next three callers up, we are going to get your calls and come back to our guests here as well in the studio. Stay with us. Don't go away.
Come, you masters of war, you that build the big guns, you that build the death planes, you that build all the bombs.
That's Masters of War by Bob Dylan, recorded on this day in 1963, and I'm Mark Steiner as we look at what is going on with the Freddie Gray case with our guests here, the Reverend Dr. Heber Brown, Dr. Kimberly Moffitt, Ray Cook, Tim Wilson, and James MacArthur, and you at 410-319-8888. Folks, we only have about 15 minutes left in this segment, so I'm going to asked you, as I call on you, to get your points across. We can get your ideas out fairly quickly. Come back to our panelists so we have a way to wrap this up. We're coming back to this on Monday. And one of the women who was arrested will be joining us Monday along with Eddie Conway. Dominique will be here, and we'll be talking to them and others on Monday as well. So we'll be on this, and our producers are going to be out over the weekend on these demonstrations, and my wife and I are going to be there as well just to walk in solidarity so that we can continue this. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Let's go to Barbara. You're on the air.
Hi, Mark. I just wanted to let people know who may not know yet that Research Associates Foundation is offering small grants up to $2,500 to organizations and individuals who are doing progressive work in Baltimore. And this particular grant cycle, we're especially interested in getting grant proposals for organizing work having to do with the injustice system here in Baltimore and police issues of police brutality and so forth. The deadline is tomorrow. You can go to RAF, that stands for Research Associates Foundation, rafbaltimore.org.
And we'll put that on our website. And thank you so much. I appreciate the work that you all do in putting out these grants to the community. And I think people who hear that should go, because it's a group that does care about this community. And just write up what you think and feel. Write what you think you want to do in the community. Put it out there for them. And they consider things very seriously. So please do that, raf.org. 410-319-8888. Ray in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Mark, I wanted to make a quick point. You said don't have a lot of time left. Ray Cook, thanks for the work you've done over the years. I'm going to make a point, Mark, that most people in the studio and in the audience are going to disagree with. Black people in America have accepted their status as a colonized people. We expect the whites that are in power, to save us. South Africa, at the height of apartheid, was 85% black, but yet the 15% whites ruled. America right now, because of the browning of America, whites in power are establishing a de facto South Africa state. And it's empirically proved by the prison system. It's empirically proved by the health index of our children and black adults, HIV, AIDS still destroying our women. It's proven by the high dropout rates. And until we have a black agenda outside of politics that is effective in boycotts, economic strategies, and a major sacrifice from black people that I do not see happening, we will continue this surprise that whites in power are still killing us.
All right, thanks for your call. And let's go to Charlotte in Baltimore. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you, Mark. Thank you so much for this. And hello to Reverend Brown and Ray Cook. I just want to urge, I know we all have different opinions and different voices, but I really want to urge that we do have one loud voice for the media. That will have the biggest impact, and that will get some change. So in terms of marches, if we can consolidate and get it together, please get the word out of where the biggest, loudest march will be today and in the future. I want the biggest impact for the media and to change things.
All right. Thank you so much. Let's try to go to Leo with a quick thought this time. Leo, please, brother, go ahead.
Yes. Good morning.
Good morning.
Mark Steiner and Pastor Brown and everyone. The fundamental question, will Marilyn Mosby prosecute these police officers? That's a fundamental concern that I want to have said by others. She's the state's attorney. We expect her to do her due diligence. The mayor's image, I'm not concerned about the mayor's image, and we know that the Fraternal Order of Police have a lynch mob psychology, and they're promoting a lynch mob context in which they are organizing and destroying and killing our youth. So we need to be about the business of providing economic pressure, bringing the kind of economic pressure and boycotts on the Inner Harbor, limiting, ending convention business in Baltimore City until we can bring about a resolution of the injustices that we face as African people. Cut off their financial water to this city, and you're going to get some movement.
Leo, always good to hear from you, brother. And I always let you on. I've known Leo since he started going to jail together when I was a kid and he was at Morgan. So good to hear from you, Leo. So let's go around the room here, and I want to get some final thoughts from everybody about what – and if you we can talk about that, everybody knows what's happening the next few days of demonstrations. Please tell our listeners so they know what's going on. And final thoughts from everybody. We'll go around the room, starting with Tim.
Okay. I think that once we know for sure that, you know, everybody is at peace and we got some type of structure where after, I think it's going to be Saturday, where it's supposed to be the mass march, when, you know, the few people that stand up and we talk and we get some type of organization going on, I think that it's going to ease a lot of people's pain. But honestly, I think that most people just need to stop turning to the media, because the media is actually turning this thing around, as you can see, far as what was going on yesterday that was down at the Western District where they was throwing things at the police and stuff. And it's not only fueling our people, it's fueling the police department as well, you know, just by seeing this. Now, it's not all police officers, because as you can see, a lot of the police officers was marching with us, you know, so it's not all of them. But, you know, maybe we can come together this Saturday, and I will respect it if everybody come out, you know, and just show support, and we can all get this together. But like I said, you know, I'm 25 years old, and I have two children of my own. I have a daughter, and I have a son. You understand what I'm saying? And I'm trying to live for them. You know, I've been surviving all my life. I'm trying to live, and I'm pretty sure everybody else is trying to live. You know, and I'm willing to stand up and take this on as being the face of our youth and young adults and black men here in Baltimore City. So if you want to contact me, you know, I'm always here. You can contact me at, you know, on our shoulders, and my number is 443-538-9913, and I'm always here in the community. I do this 24/7. I don't just do this for 5 minutes to 10 minutes, 9 to 5. This is 24/7.
Ray, final quick thought.
One of the things I wanted to share with the people is that let's keep this thing peaceful, because police know how to deal with brute force. But what we need to do is stay focused on that change is needed, not just for Maryland, but for across the country. And right now, Baltimore is in the focus, is in the limelight. But let's keep this thing peaceful, man, because we need a change for our young people and for our babies that's coming along the way. And if we could work, continue to work together and continue to respect each other's space, whether you be in the hood or whether you be on the hill, we still need to respect each other.
Kimberly Moffitt.
I want to let Ray know when he called in that I actually agree with him and make sure that he knows that there are a number of us that do believe that as black folks, we have embraced a perspective, which I think is a lot about us being forgiven people, that we expect our government and our communities to take care of us. But it is very clear, it has been given to us time and time again, that the government nor folks outside of our communities are willing to help us. And so we have to be the ones to institute change and stop waiting on someone else to do this for us, because otherwise the peril that we are in as communities now will only continue. And many of us will be sitting here still having these conversations a decade from now. So it's time for us in our communities to do the work and stop looking to the mayor, stop looking to any other politician, stop looking for the media to help tell that narrative about what our plight is, and we've got to do the work ourselves.
Heber Brown.
Quick things. Let's keep the focus on the continued pressure via the marches and demonstrations. Should keep the focus on the investigation of the murder of Freddie Gray. We need to keep eyes and keep pressure on the investigation, because we've seen how these things have gone in the past. And I believe that there's some who may be just waiting for us to calm down or whatever. So keep the pressure on the investigation on the murder of Freddie Gray. Keep support and prayers for that family and all families affected by systemic violence in our community. Join the fight to change laws and policies for the protection of our community. Those of us who have been in Annapolis, we've been doing it for a long time. We shut down a youth jail in East Baltimore some years ago. And so there are people in this town who've been doing it for a long time. For those who have not, find a way to get into the fight. on the larger picture in terms of laws and policies for the protection of our community. Embrace those things. Three, embrace those things that we can do ourselves. We can police the police. I've been cop watching all week long. The people on the air will tell, I got my camera and my video right now. I'm cop watching all week and loading the information online. So that let's let that be a more common practice in our community, that we police the police since they can't seem to police themselves. Engage in organizer trainings. Churches and community centers open up so that we can have organizer trainings, continue leadership development in our communities. Cooperative economics as well. Let's be more strategic about our money. I think Brother Leo shared that. Be more strategic about how we spend our money, how we put our money together. Finally, we are going through acute trauma as a community. And it is real. This is not just an issue for me. I live with it, and it's so heavy, and it hurts. So finally, I want to encourage everybody listening to seek mental health support. Get mental health resources. Find healing circles and spaces. This is not normal, that what we're going through. It's acute trauma. And so when you get opportunity, go and get help. I'm going to get help. I need it. I'm traumatized by this right now. And so let's do that. Let's normalize that. Let's take the stigma away from getting help that we need. And if you see a brother or a sister who needs that kind of help, extend that help. Provide sanctuary for your brother or your sister so you're not going through it by themselves.
And our children. And our children. Because we're focusing so much on our adults, but we need to make sure we're taking care of our babies.
We have only about 30 seconds left.
Okay, echoing everything he said and also adding to it, it needs to be clear that serious reform needs to happen. We need police actually using real probable cause. Let's not forget that. This whole thing wouldn't have happened if they weren't just making something up, doing what I did when I was in humane law enforcement. Hey, there's a stray dog. Let me go chase it. We can't have that continue. We can't be treated like animals where they're just chasing us down just because, hey, if we stop him, I'm sure we'll find something on him. That attitude, we have to admit that that's what they're doing. They've been doing this, and it has to stop. Leadership starts at the top. The mayor, the police commissioner, they can change this today. They know who's doing it.
I want to thank all of you for being here. You saw James MacArthur, before that, the Reverend Dr. Heber Brown, before that, Dr. Kimberly Moffitt, before that, the wonderful Ray Cook, and Tim Wilson after that, all from On Our Shoulders. Thank you so much for all for being here and for this conversation we've had. We'll come back to this Monday morning, and we'll be out over the weekend as well. You're hearing the wonderful Leontine Price singing beneath us today for our day in history, and we'll be right back. Stay with us. Don't go away.